Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Narrative Oxford, a podcast that explores the interesting people, places, and things in our lovely city. This episode is on the theme of charities and volunteering. We live in such a fast-paced life here in Oxford that it's sometimes easy to get wrapped up in our own lives. So this week, I wanted to draw attention to how we can make a huge impact in other people's lives right here in Oxford. I'll be talking to people both inside and outside of the university on how they've gotten involved. So to start with, let's look at the Oxford colleges. Oxford has 38 colleges, and within each one there's a committee which allows its students to make decisions about how things are run. Within many colleges, there's a specific representative for charities whose job it is to draw students' attention to these important issues and raise money and awareness. I decided to talk to our very own college rep, Ellen, to get an inside perspective on the kind of things we do within our colleges to contribute to charity.
I'm Ellen, I go to Brasenose, and my role is the Environment and Charities Rep of the JCR.
Okay, so for people that don't really understand what that is, or maybe if they don't go to Oxford or don't have that in their college, can you explain like a bit what kind of your role is as rep?
So basically, I kind of promote anything environmentally friendly or charitable going on in college. I organise events, so I have things like pub quizzes, secondhand sales, speed dating, and any kind of money, any money I make, all the proceeds go to charity. So I also run charity elections every term, so the whole JCR donates about £6 per term in their battles towards charities, and then we have a pot of money, and then I run nominations. People can put forward a charity that they would like us to donate to. They give a quick speech about it, and then we have votes, and then the top two local charities, top two national charities, and top two international charities, then they're all picked. I donate to them about £400 each. And there's a lot of other kind of stuff within that. If anyone kind of has any questions about environment charities, they come to me. And yeah, it kind of varies every term what kind of initiatives I run. But those are kind of the basics of what I do.
Okay. And so what do you think, would you say, has been the most successful like event that you've run for charities?
It's quite difficult to get like good, not even a good turnout, but like something that's going to make a lot of money. That's what I've kind of struggled with. So I know in some other colleges, like the Promise auctions do really, really well, make loads of money. And ours did do like quite well. I think we made about £400, or maybe even more. But like, that's just not even comparable to some other colleges. Some of the colleges make thousands. So I think like probably my most successful thing is probably my pub quizzes, because they're like always very popular. And I can consistently make about £120 or something, and then which is not massive, but like it obviously goes to a really good cause. Basically, I ask people to sign up in advance, so I kind of get people to commit, and then also like form their groups, just so I have an idea of like how many groups there are, so I know how many sheets to print out. And then I do quite a few different rounds. So I have like a sports round, I have a politics round, I have a general knowledge round, usually have a quotes round, I have usually have picture rounds. So we've had like flags before, we've had like baby celebrities and stuff like that. And then basically, we just go through all the rounds. I'm on the microphone down the bar.
MC.
Yeah, of course. And then, yeah, I say the questions. People fill in their form. We mark them at the end. And then whoever the winner usually gets, like, a tab behind the bar. That's basically how it goes.
Cool.
So I'd say, as a charity event, that's probably my most successful thing. But then also, like, promoting charitable events outside of Brasenose. So things like encouraging people to kind of go to Rag Ball, which is going to, like, raise thousands of pounds. So, yeah.
So which are the charities that we are currently supporting as a college?
So we don't really currently support any charities, it's more like a one-off payment. So we do consistently really donate now to Against Malaria Foundation, which is the probably the most effective charity in the world, at least it is most effective according to Giving What We Can. We regularly donate to the Oxfordshire Sexual Assault and Rape Crisis Centre. That's one of our consistent like local charities that we donate to. Apart from that, it varies quite a lot. Last time we donated to Autistica, we donated to the Guy Hutchinson Memorial Fund, which is more of a local charity run in Manchester. And then I think the other... Oh, I always get this wrong. Schizius Matsits Control Initiative. I actually can't say
it. You did very well.
Thanks. Which is probably the second most effective charity. We usually donate to that.
So if you just like explain what you mean by effective, because I know I only kind of like learned about like Giving What We Can and all the kind of like how they scale it and stuff recently.
So like it's probably a bit more complicated than I'm about to explain, but like essentially it's just the charities in which where the money you're giving that's going to have the highest likelihood of going straight to the person who needs it. So that's kind of the first aspect. And the second aspect is that they use that money effectively. So it's looking at, like, what is the best way to spend your money in terms of, like saving lives is often the way they look at it. So, for example, for SCI, they have... It's like deworming tablets, and like giving someone a deworming tablet can literally like prevent them from developing a horrific disease that could kill them. And so, and it's so cheap, just giving them a tablet, that's literally all you need to do. So in terms of that, over maybe like a cancer charity in which you're kind of paying thousands of pounds for someone's treatment, obviously that's really important. But if you're looking at it in more of like an effectiveness way, that is going to be a cheaper way of kind of saving lives. So I mean, like, which is not obviously... It doesn't always have to be the approach. Obviously, it shouldn't. So we look after kind of a range of people. So that's how some people prefer to spend their money. And so that's why they're interested in that. And so for Gates Malaria Foundation, they basically spend like £5 on getting people nets. And then those nets literally save people from malaria. And so they save like millions of lives every year. And a lot of that, about, I think about 95% of the money that you spend towards Gates Malaria Foundation goes straight to buying those nets. So basically, they really limit their costs in terms of administration fees and in terms of staff. Kind of, it's all focused on giving to the people, which is unfortunately not the case with a lot of charities. A lot of them aren't run very effectively. And so that's a, and it's becoming an increasingly important thing that people are looking at, because when, you, when you're giving money to charity, you're expecting it to go to people, not to kind of be wasted.
Or to like fund their campaigns, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Cool. So in terms of being a charity's rep, mm-hmm. do you feel like there's anything that you think should be done that isn't being currently done, like across university wide? Like, is there any kind of issues that you think need to be tackled more that aren't being tackled within colleges? Or like need more kind of exposure to kind of university students?
I'm not sure. I think probably like people being involved with charities, because like it's quite a limit in Oxford that if you want to get involved in a charity, often it's either like teaching children or homelessness. Whereas there's not that much, like, available, like, if you kind of want to work for a mental health charity or, like, a sexual assault charity or even, like, an animal charity or anything, it's quite difficult in Oxford, particularly. Like, Oxfordshire, maybe, if you kind of travelled out a bit, but there's not that much stuff you can do in the centre of Oxford. So maybe kind of more schemes in which people kind of... There's, like, a minibus coming to the centre of town, which takes people to somewhere where you can, like, walk dogs in the pound, or kind of... You can go to, I don't know, like go to some like a mental health charity and kind of maybe be trained as to how to maybe learn more about mental health in the first place, and kind of train how to best deal with people who have different mental health disorders and what you can do to kind of help them.
So that's a snapshot into the kind of thing that individual colleges do. Maybe some ideas as to how their work could be improved in the future. We're now focused on a charitable initiative that's run by Oxford students and that's right on our doorstep, the Tell Street Homeless Action Initiative. As anyone who's walked around the city of Oxford will know, we have a very visible and pressing homelessness problem in our city. I caught up with Yasmin, who volunteers as secretary of TSHA, to ask how the initiative works and how anyone can get involved.
I'm Yasmin, I go to Brasenose and I'm a second year psychologist.
Cool. So can you tell me a little bit about the Tell Street Homeless Action Initiative and like how you got involved with it?
So Tell Street Homeless Action was set up only a couple of years ago, it's relatively new. What we do is we just go around the streets looking for homeless people, chatting to them, offering them drinks and things. So it started off with just the Tell Street colleges. So I think Exeter, Lincoln and Jesus. But now we're trying to expand to other colleges, so we've opened it up to everyone.
So how did you hear about it and why did you get involved?
So I first heard about it from our college rep, Julian, who basically just, he posted a link, I think, to the Facebook group. And I heard of a couple of people who were going on shifts, so I checked out the rotor and I didn't really understand what it was at first. So I thought it was like a soup kitchen or something. So I thought I'd just go along to a shift and see how it all worked.
Okay, and so where does, so like the food and drink you say, where does that come from? Where's it sourced?
So we buy it all ourselves. We have quite a small budget. We get funding just from JCRs and things, from like charity motions. We had a big donation from Lincoln Ball, which is good. But most of our budget just goes on food and like paper cups and things. So at the start of a shift or the day before or whatever, someone will just go to Tesco, grab things like bread, cheese, ham, like basic things. We don't make anything exciting, just sandwiches. But that's because it's more about the company anyway. It's more about chatting to people, letting them know there are people there who care about them, offering them a hot drink now that it's getting cold especially. But it's not so much about the food, it's just about speaking to people. Every shift is different. Usually the first time I speak to people, I'll find out a little bit about them, and then some of them are very keen to tell you their life story. You'll ask them a question and they'll talk to you for half an hour. Other ones aren't interested in talking, they'll just take their drink or they'll just say no thank you and you'll carry on. But a lot of them are very keen to tell you about themselves. And so I find that usually the first time I talk to someone, I'll find out a bit about them, and then the next time I go, I'll say, oh, I remember you, and they'll talk to me a bit more, and you kind of build up relationships, like you make sure you remember people's names and things like that, so it really feels like you do have a relationship with the people, and then you'll see them in the street the next day and say, oh, hi, how are you doing, and have a brief chat. So it's quite nice. It's not just about going and doing your thing and then going home. Like, you actually, it improves every time you go out, and you'll see familiar faces, you'll see new faces on shifts. Like, it's very, very variable, but that's what makes it interesting.
Right, so is there like a typical route that you go from say Tell Street? Is there, like, how do you find people, like the homeless people in particular? Are they usually in like similar places, or?
Well, what we usually do is, it depends on how many people are on shift, but usually we'll only have enough people for one group. So we'll do our main route, which is High Street and then Corn Market. If we have more than one person or more than one group, or if we have more time, then we might do George Street, St Giles, Broad Street. We do tend to find people in similar places. There are often groups that hang around together and then individuals who stay by themselves, and you tend to get to know where people are likely to be. But there are also big groups around the shelters, which is slightly further out, which at the moment we can't go to because the groups are so big and because we only have a limited amount of food. It wouldn't really be fair to go down with 5 sandwiches and then have 15 people complaining. But what we're hoping is that if we can get plenty more people to sign up, get quite a few people on shift each night, then we can do several routes, or we can all take a big group down to the shelter and meet a lot more people.
So how long ago did you get involved, and has it changed at all since you've been involved?
I started last Michaelmas, and I only did, I think, 4 shifts. So I kind of got introduced to it then, and then I had a break over Hillary because I had my exams, and then got really into it during Trinity because I'd done my exams, so I had more time to go out. And that was when I really, really, like, learned how everything works, got to know how to speak to people more. Like, my first few shifts, they were kind of introducing me to it, and I left it to the committee member who was there with me because I was new. There'll always be a committee member on shift, and I kind of stepped back and helped to make the drinks and let them do the chatting. But it was in Trinity that I really kind of took the initiative and got chatting to people and went over myself and things like that. And it made a difference.
So I'm actually, tonight I'm going to do my first shift at Tell Street Homeless Action, so I'm quite excited. I'm a bit nervous, but just, I think it's probably quite useful if people wanted to get involved. I guess the first time you go can be quite intimidating, like, you don't know what to expect. So, like, if you could just make me feel better and, like, prepare me. So, like, what kind of things should I expect? Like, how does it work for the first time?
Well, there's no reason to be intimidated at all. Like, it sounds, because it's obviously it's something new, it can be daunting, but when you go, you'll realise it's all very, very informal. So you'll, at 7 o'clock, you'll meet whoever is the committee member on shift at Lincoln Lodge. Sometimes it can be a bit confusion if you don't know what each other look like. You'll be standing next to each other for 10 minutes and then suddenly say, are you here for the homeless shift? So you'll meet the committee member, anyone else who's on shift, and they'll take you to Tail Yard Kitchen, which is part of Lincoln accommodation, but they've allowed us to use it. So you'll go, they'll explain a bit to you about what you're going to do, they'll answer any questions that you have. In the kitchen we've got a little, like, information pack that's got, like, route maps, ideas of what questions to ask people, things like that. But it's more about learning as you go along, really. Like, you'll pick it up really, really quickly, and you can do as much or as little as once. So, like I said, like, you can hang back a bit and let, like, just watch for the first session, or you can do as much or as little as you want. So first you'll be in the kitchen, you'll be filling flasks with hot water, putting tea, coffee, biscuits and things into carrier bags, and preparing sandwiches. So you take all this out, just carry them in carrier bags, just as much as you can carry. You'll typically make, like, a loaf of bread's worth of sandwiches in a night, but it's very variable as to how many of these get taken. Sometimes you run out and have to go and make more. You'll, up until any time until 9, you'll be walking around the streets. It could be really busy, it could be quite quiet. Generally in winter it's quite busy, which is why we need loads of people at the moment. You'll just walk around. If you see a homeless person, you'll go up to them. If they're asleep, we tend to leave them, obviously. If they want to talk, you'll just say, hi, how's your day going? You're managing to keep warm, that kind of thing. If they want to chat, they'll chat back to you. Sometimes it'll take them a minute to warm up, so a lot of them know what we do. Like, they'll see the carrier bags, and often we'll be sitting there making a drink and three other people will come over and ask for coffee, and sometimes it can get a bit of a mad rush, but it's all very informal, and it's a nice way to kind of get to know the person who's on shift with you as well. Like, I've made a few friends through it, just by, because you're chatting as you're walking around, which is really nice, and nice when it's cold and dark as well, obviously, to have some company. And then the more times you do it, the more familiar you'll become with it. And I always say to people, like, don't worry if your first shift doesn't go completely smoothly, because sometimes you'll happen to meet lots of people who just don't want to talk, or they might be a bit cold, might be having a bad day. Sometimes it'll go really smoothly and people will be really chatty and really happy to talk to you. Sometimes you have to kind of distance yourself from people's problems, so they'll tell you about all the problems they'll have, like medical problems, financial problems, like their past. And it can be quite hard to kind of detach yourself from that, detach your emotions. But you've got to remember that it's not your problem and that you're just there to listen to them, and that's all you can do for them in terms of Tell Street and the short-term work that we do. But by doing it, you learn so much about homelessness, about what's actually available, about how, like, the housing system works, things like that. And you'd be very surprised at how difficult it actually is for them to get the help that they need. Because obviously you walk around, you see homeless people all the time, especially in Oxford, but by actually talking to them, you realise the extent of the problem. Because a lot of people, obviously, they'll walk around, they'll see homeless people and think, they're not making an effort, whatever, but it is actually very hard for them. And so it's really good to kind of talk to them and get a first-hand experience of that. A lot of people assume they're all on drugs or alcohol, which they're definitely not. Obviously some of them are, but not all of them. Homeless people often do want to get back into society. It's not just that they're lazy, but there are so many obstacles that are put in their way that makes it hard, and often they give up a little bit, but it's not for want of trying. So I think, yeah, the biggest misconception would just be that they're not approachable, they don't want to be part of society. They really do. They love a lot of them love having a chat if you go and talk to them. And often they'll tell stories about how students can be quite judgmental, can be abusive. I've heard of people, like, stealing sleeping bags and things like that, and it's so unnecessary, because you speak to people and you realise they just don't deserve that. That's the last thing they need. So, yeah, I think it's worth doing it just to get their perspective on homelessness. And it's very humbling as well. Like, it kind of puts things into perspective for you. And I've heard people say, and I agree, that it kind of, like, if you're having an essay crisis one night and then you go out and you speak to these people who have, like, real problems, it kind of just makes you sit back and think about whether your problems are actually that big. So in a way, like, in a selfish way, it can kind of make you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. And so was it because of that that you decided to do the big sleep out in Oxford? Yeah, so it was like a fundraising event.
Yeah, fundraising event.
And so what exactly did you have to do for the event?
So what we did was, it was from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So we had to gather all the warm clothes that we could, sleeping bags, ground mats, things like that, hats and scarves, and we basically spent the night sleeping in the open. Yeah, it was because of my experiences of talking to homeless people, and because it's something that I've become so invested in. Not even because I wanted to, but it's just through doing the volunteering and realising what a big problem it is. Knowing that we have quite a small budget and that what we do is, it's good, but it's only short term. I know that it's important to raise money for charities that do actually want to make a long-term difference, and that was the aim of the three charities who organised it. So it was organised by Aspire, Oxford Homeless Pathways, who they run a few of the shelters in Oxford, and Connections Floating Support, and they all have slightly different purposes. So, like I say, Oxford Homeless Pathways runs the shelters, like, interacts a lot with people, whereas Aspire works more on kind of improving people's skills and allowing them to learn how to reintegrate themselves, like employability skills, things like that. Yeah, so obviously they're organisations that make a lasting difference. And the target that we were set was to raise £100. And so I realised that if everyone doing it raised £100, it could potentially make a massive difference. So yeah, I signed up. I also kind of wanted to practice what I preach a little bit, because I go around telling people, like, you should volunteer, you should do this, you should do that. So I thought I should do something that's actually going to make a big difference and make people realise, like, this is an issue. So it was all secure and safe. We were in it's called Hill End Outdoor Centre. But yeah, we went, and the night started by listening to speeches of people who have been homeless or who have worked with the homeless, which obviously I know quite a bit about it just from speaking to people, but hearing it from the perspective of people who actually work in these organisations, that was quite interesting as well. And then we listened to some music from local musicians. One of them was Neo, who most people from Oxford will recognise. He's got the big beard, wears the glasses and the hat and the trench coat. He is fundraising at the moment. He's selling CDs, but all of his profits go towards homeless charities. I think he's working with one of the charities, I can't remember which one. But their goal is to build a new shelter for all the homeless people in Oxford. And he's trying to fundraise £3 million.
How's it going so far?
I'm not sure, actually, but I know he's popular, and people know that he is trying to make a difference.
Everyone buy a CD, okay?
Yeah, everyone buy a CD. £10. But yeah, so they were there, they were singing songs, then we were provided with soup from, I think it was the Oxford Hub Kitchen, that was what they said. They gave us a selection of soup, and then we watched the film Not Just Homeless, which is a documentary, mainly consists of just interviews with people who have been homeless or at some point maybe still are, but interviews about like their experiences and how they coped with it and things like that, what support is available for them.
Sure.
And then there was a campfire, so we all sat around the campfire and the musicians sang some more songs for us, which was quite nice. And then we bedded down, we had to find our spot in the field, get cosy in our sleeping bags. Thankfully it was quite a mild night, we were very, very lucky. Not that it was easy, but it was a really good experience, and I met a really nice group of people who made it quite a lot of fun, actually. I felt guilty for having so much fun. Overall the event managed to raise, I think, £17,000.
Wow.
Which included contributions from big companies. I think BMW was one of them, and then a couple more.
And so how many people got involved, like, in the actual sleep out?
I think it was 75 in total.
Great.
Not as many students as you think, actually. It was more of a community thing. A lot of them were volunteers from the organisations themselves. It was really nice to see so many people from the uni and from outside the uni all coming together for one cause.
So for volunteers that want to get involved, how would you recommend they go about it?
So I would recommend looking for our Facebook page, Turl Street Homeless Action. It's all mainly done through Facebook. We had a stall at Freshers Fair, word of mouth as well. We encourage people to bring friends. It's all for students, but anyone's welcome to join. So sometimes students will bring along either their friends from other unis or people from church groups, things like that. And there are other groups as well, a lot of church groups actually, who go around and do the same thing as us. So we're not the only organisation doing it, which is a relief, seeing as we can't go out every night because of the small number of volunteers that we've got. Yeah, so Turl Street Homeless Action Facebook group, it's an open group, so if you just request to join, someone will add you. You'll find the rota on there to sign up. So basically the way you sign up is you just look on the rota for a day where there's at least one other person going, or if you leave a gap for someone else to fill their name in and just make sure there's someone else on a night. We never go out alone. Names in bold will be names of committee members, so if you sign up for one of those days, there'll definitely be someone who can show you the ropes. There's no obligation to do it again, but we find that most people do enjoy it and do want to come back. They find it kind of different to what they were expecting. But yeah, it's really good to do just at least once, if nothing else. And we also have a mailing list, which gives details of like meetings. Every now and again, we'll meet up just to discuss like what's going on, how we're doing in terms of budget and things like that. That's pretty much it. Everything's on the Facebook group.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to my first shift tonight.
Good luck.
And yeah, I recommend that everyone goes on the Facebook page and sign up to just one shift because, well, I'll let you know after my shift how it was, but I'm sure it'll be great. Just try it once. And yeah, so thank you so much for talking to me, Yasmin.
Okay, so we are currently walking back from our first shift, Ellen and I.
Yeah.
Ellen, how did you find it, do you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The people we spoke to were really lovely and really, really grateful. And it was just, like, quite nice to see a new side to Oxford and kind of hear people's stories and the interesting things they have to say. It's definitely really encouraged me to go again and kind of keep on doing it because people are so grateful and you can really tell the difference it makes that night by having, like, a hot cup of tea or a sandwich or something.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Next, I decided to chat to Molly Beck to ask her about her experiences within two of what might be the most established charities in Oxford Uni. Jacari, a volunteered teaching scheme, and the Ox Hub, which basically does everything, but I'll let Molly explain that.
So Jacari is a charity that provides home tutoring for disadvantaged children aged 4 to 16 who don't speak English as their first language. Students spend an hour a week helping a child in the areas which they're struggling. We mainly support children that come from countries seeking asylum. You just go to their house and help them with whatever they want, whether that's helping with their homework or doing practice SATs papers. Completely varies depending on the age of your child. There's a lot of support networks in place to help people plan lessons. We have a group to share ideas that people can post on if they're stuck with lesson plans, and teaching officers that can help you out whenever you need.
Okay, cool. And so how do you get assigned to the student, to the teacher? How does that work?
So if you just sign up on our website and then our coordinator will sign you up for pupil, you can say your preferences and we try our very hardest to accommodate those. But obviously the children come first and it depends on their needs and which students we have available.
Okay, and how long has Jacari been going on for?
It's the oldest charity in Oxford. It's been going on for a very long time, I think over 70 years, but right. I'm not sure.
And so why did you decide to get involved?
It was one of the first charities I heard about. I feel very strongly about educational disadvantage. We go to a fantastic university and we are so lucky to have all of the privileges that we've been given. And I feel like it's very strange to have this amazing university in an area that has some of the worst schools in the country, and that we should use the things that we've been given to be able to help others.
That's great. And so what would you say to people that were thinking of joining? What would be your advice as to how to get involved with charities?
It's just 1 hour a week. Everyone has time for that, and it's one of the best things that I've done. If I didn't do volunteering, I would just spend that hour watching Netflix and the time would be nowhere near as productive. I've met some amazing people through it, and every single time I go to my child's house, it feels like I've done something good. If you reach out to anyone that's involved, they'll be more than happy to tell you about it. We have a website, and come see us at Freshers' Fair to find out more.
And so could you tell me a little bit about OxHub, the other charity you've worked with?
So Oxford Hub is a network that connects students working across different courses, allowing them to share insight, knowledge and experience with the aim to make all groups doing social action at Oxford more effective. We do a whole range of things. We provide training sessions, support student-run community volunteering, help students find jobs and internships in the third sector, and generally just try to connect together people who are interested in the same things. We send out information once a week with all of the different volunteering opportunities available in Oxford and provide support to anyone wanting to start up their own social action-based initiative.
So what is the kind of central role of OxHub the other charities don't kind of fulfil within Oxford? Is it mainly that it connects all the different ones together?
So it was founded 8 years ago by somebody who saw all the amazing things that were happening in Oxford, but saw a lot of groups doing the same thing and thought, if these groups work together, we can achieve more. People have different skill sets, they have different ideas, and when you start connecting people with the same ideas, you can achieve so much more.
Great, and so what specifically have you done with them?
So I started off as outreach coordinator and focused on outreach, organising a student volunteering fair with lots of different groups and societies, and I started emailing college charities reps every week trying to get them to share the information with people in their college. Since then I've gone on to be vice president and I now have a more supporting role, supporting the other members of the exec. We have everything from environment to social enterprise, so there's someone focusing on every area in Oxford. And through this, organise lots of different events. We're hoping to run a really big student volunteering fair in Freshers' Week. We run series events every week. Each one has a different theme. And we help different groups come together.
Great. And so is it easy to get involved with?
We have an executive committee of about 10 people, which is what the actual Oxford Hub is. But if you reach out to any of us saying that you're interested in any area of volunteering, we can help you find the right charity for you. There are so many different things available in Oxford, and Oxford Hub is the place to come to find out what there is available to you.
Up next, I'll zoom out a little further to a charitable initiative founded in Oxford, but outside of the university, namely the Oxford Food Surplus Cafe.
So my name's Peter, and I am one of the founding members of the Oxford Food Surplus Cafe, which is a volunteer-run project in Oxford, which has been going since April last year. So we started it because there are a lot of services and community projects in Oxford which are set up to support people in food poverty. But what we realised is that there was actually quite a big gap in the support available, specifically for people who don't fit into particular brackets. For example, people who aren't homeless, people who have children who are over the age of five and so aren't eligible for the kind of support you can have if you have a child under five, people who are in work but are in very low-paying jobs, people who are transitioning from one service to the other. Basically, there was no real support for people in food poverty who didn't have a pre-existing label attached to them. And what we wanted to do was create a space and an event that was accessible to absolutely everyone, regardless of how much money you have, what your relationship to food is, how healthily you eat. Any kind of label just gets left at the door. And so what we do is we run events where we collect huge amounts of surplus food, cook it all up into healthy meals, and then ask people to donate on a pay-as-you-feel basis. So what that does is allows people to pay what they can afford, but also what they think the food is worth. And it's also about getting people to think about the value of food, because that's not a question that is asked of us very often. So it's a pay-as-you-feel system, and people donate. And there's absolutely no guidelines on what people put in a tenner. Some people might put in 20p. Some people might put in nothing at all. And it's really important that that choice is there for people, and we don't push them in any way. What we find is generally we make more money than it costs to put on, because our costs aren't very high. We have to pay for the venue and maybe a bit of equipment or something like that. But generally, we don't have to pay for any of the food, because that's all surplus, and we're all volunteers doing it in our spare time. The very first event we had, we raised £750. So, you know, that was absolutely huge. That was meant we could a bit more secure about our future going forwards, because not only do we don't know what food we're going to have until the day before we do an event. You know, we don't know if we're going to be able to afford to do more events until we've got the money from the last one. So we are really kind of existing hand to mouth, but it keeps us on our toes as well. We're certainly not going to get comfortable doing this.
Sure.
If we do have, if we do make a surplus of money, that's fantastic, because we can do a number of things with that. So three things: we can put some of it aside into our bank account to help subsidise events in other communities where maybe we don't make as much money. We can pay for training to give to volunteers. And thirdly, if we've got money left over, we always like to donate it to various charities or local causes or things that are in the attention at the moment. So just after the EU referendum, we donated all of the money raised from the cafe there to Hope Not Hate, which is a great charity doing anti-hate crime work. And it's really nice to be able to do that with the money that we raise.
Great. And so could you, just for people that haven't heard of kind of surplus and using that kind of food, a bit about where the food comes from, where you source it from?
So food surplus, food waste is a massive issue globally. Across the world, I think the estimates are that between a third and a half of all food produced for human consumption is never eaten. And it's a really, really big issue. But one of the largest drivers in this country certainly is retailers and wholesalers, supermarkets, that kind of thing, who treat food very much as a product rather than a resource, something to be owned and sold, and something that has financial value. So supermarkets will often buy stock that they know they will never sell. It's just to make the shelves look full. So what we do is we work with the Oxford Food Bank, which is an incredible organisation who collect surplus food from those supermarkets and those wholesalers, food which is perfectly good to eat. Basically, they can't sell it. So that might be that it's a pack of 20 cartons of something and one of the cartons got smashed and they can't sell the rest of them. Or it might be that the labelling was a bit bad and they can't sell it. So basically, this is all perfectly edible food, and it's all sorts of things from kind of the more obvious foodstuffs, right down to we've had things like saffron, truffle, like absolutely bizarre things. And the food bank distributes that food to charities across Oxford who then use it to provide free or subsidised meals for people in need. But having worked with them a few times, we realised that even they have a surplus. So even they have so much food coming in that they can't get rid of, or they can't shift in time before it goes out of date. So we take the surplus of their surplus, and that's what we use to make the meals we serve at the cafe.
Right. Okay, that's great. And so since you've been going, have you grown quite a big community? Like, how do you find volunteers and stuff?
We've been amazed at how much people have got on board with the idea. It seems to have really captured people's attention. I mean, food waste is a big thing in the news at the moment, and has been for a good year or so. So we have a Facebook page and we have a mailing list, but a lot of our volunteers are word of mouth, or people that have been to the cafe and then want to get involved. And we've got roles in the kitchen, and we can also offer people accredited training in food safety for caterers. But we also need people, you know, in front of house, people just chatting to those who come in. It's a really important thing that often gets forgotten, I think, is that food is a really social idea. And not only do we want to provide food for people, we want to provide a social space. And so having volunteers who can kind of just keep an eye on people are coming in, if people are, anyone sitting on their own or not talking to anyone else, just helping them, you know, start a conversation. And a lot of people who come in tell us that actually the social element is just as important as the food, and actually being able to talk to someone else is a luxury that a lot of us, I think, take for granted.
Are there many kind of student volunteers, or is it mainly kind of just residents of Oxford that volunteer?
Sometimes we get a lot of student volunteers, maybe from a particular college or a particular organisation. Obviously in term time, much more than over the summer.
Sure, yeah.
But we're always looking for more. Not just because we need volunteers and it, you know, helps the cafe function because everybody is doing it in their spare time, but also, you know, to get people out to a community centre that they might not otherwise visit, and that integration between students who want to do, you know, interesting and important stuff and the Oxford community who have been here for years and who are doing absolutely phenomenal work, not just around food, but a huge number of social issues. And I think that there's a lot that both groups can learn from each other, and getting people together and, you know, chatting over cooking or chatting over overeating or packing up or putting the decorations out at the beginning of the day. And those conversations, you know, are just as important as anything else that happens. So we'd love to get more students involved, absolutely.
And do you have plans for the future? Are you going to do similar kind of events, or do you plan on changing it at all?
We would certainly wanted to look at taking what we've done and doing something a bit more long-term and sustainable. You know, we're only providing one meal a month for people, so it's not really addressing hunger. It's more about raising awareness and creating a social space and nudging a social shift. Our long-term goal is to not exist anymore. One of the things that people really reflect on when they come to the cafe is just seeing how much food we create from what is the surplus of the surplus. And not even that, it's just as much as I can fit in a car on a Friday, you know, it's really a tiny amount. So it's really nice to see the community pull together over an issue that we're all part of, because I think the food industry, we're all culpable in some way, not to attribute guilt anywhere, but it's a broken system, and it really benefits some people over others. And the Food Surplus Cafe, I think people latch onto that because it's one way that people can recognise that and also make little steps towards changing it, or at least thinking about a different model that we could implement on a national scale in the future.
Having talked to the founder, I got Ellen's perspective on what it's like to actually volunteer for the Surplus Cafe, and her advice for those wanting to do volunteering of any kind within Oxford. Oh. So I know you've volunteered for one of their events before, mm-hmm. and we've both been to eat there together before. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could kind of give like a brief kind of like description of what it was like to work for them, so people might want to come volunteer for them.
So basically, like, I didn't really do any of the cooking part, because you kind of have to have like some hygiene certification to do that. I think that's a bit more of like if you're a long-term volunteer, and I can't always commit to going to their events because I'm kind of not always around. because often it's like in not in term time as well. But I was kind of like on at the door when people were coming in, and they were like kind of confused what it was, because a lot of people like just didn't plan to come there; they just saw it on the street, and it was really, really popular because of that, I think, which was really good. But people came in wondering what it was, so I just kind of explained to them the system of what they had to do. So you got to go and like pick up their food and decide what they want, and then just kind of donate whatever they wanted towards it. And I just got to meet like really cool people that are obviously like willing to give up their time for a good cause, and people that kind of from all different backgrounds and like just outside of the Oxford bubble, which was really nice. Like I think I was the only Oxford student that was volunteering there. It was really, really enjoyable. And I highly recommend, if anyone wants to kind of just kind of embrace like the more community feel of Oxford and also give back and do something really environmentally friendly and like also great for homeless people, because we had so many homeless people coming in, so I got to chat to so many and hear their stories, which was like quite like harrowing sometimes, but also like just so nice to actually speak to them and kind of realize they are like real people, because often in Oxford you kind of just see them like sitting around and like doesn't really feel like, I don't know, it's just kind of nice to hear like a story behind it, and also like give them some nice food and just kind of give them kind of some shelter and a safe place to be. So yeah, it was just really enjoyable. I recommend anyone to do it.
Great.
Obviously,
yeah.
you want to fully embrace college life, but I think so often we forget there's a life outside college. That's actually like that's not that great, and it's kind of nice to be brought down to earth a little bit and kind of just appreciate there are other people, and you can make a really, really positive impact as well. I think people underestimate how much of what's in positive impact you can make if you literally just give up a few hours of your week to help someone. Like learning English, like you can literally transform their life. So yeah,
get involved.
Yeah,
great. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me.
That's all right.
And enjoy the rest of your time as Environment and Charities Rep.
Thank you very much.
So I think that just about concludes the tiny snapshot that this podcast will hopefully give you about some of the many volunteering opportunities in Oxford, both town and gown. I hope this will encourage everyone to contribute in some way, however big or small, to a good cause. And big thanks to my lovely and charitable guests, Ellen Roberts, Yasmin Achigoz, Peter Lefford, and Molly Beck. If you enjoyed this, you can find our past episodes on our website, Narrative Oxide, and like us on Facebook, our page is Narrative Oxford, and feel free to download our podcast on iTunes. As ever, we'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback, podcast ideas, or want to get involved with the team. So stay tuned for another episode next week. Bye for now.